As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by the Times Online's own Ben Smith from the Midlands, Mr. Peter Lansley, and of course, Paddy Barkley. Today we'll be discussing Chelsea's narrow defeat in the Midlands, as well as the North London Derby. Plus, in our debate, we'll be asking our panel why the same 20 Premier League managers who started the season are all still there. So please join us for the next 35 minutes or so. All right, we're going to start up in North London at Ashburton Grove, Arsenal and Tottenham. For those who missed the game, I thought it was rather exciting. Arsenal going 2-0 up and then Tottenham storming back. Now, I'm going to throw something out there and start with you, Paddy. While it's great and people talk about Harry's halftime team talk and the hex is over and all this stuff, I mean, I thought Arsenal could and should have won that game and still had the chances even in the second half to win that game. Yeah. Am I off base here?
No, absolutely not. It reminded me a little bit of Istanbul, the classic in Istanbul. I mean, by far the more gifted team lost and Arsenal played well enough to have won two matches in the first half alone. But you know, this is why the game's so great. I mean, Tottenham in the end deserved it as well. I mean, it was one of those games that you look at in a million ways. You know, at the end of it, all you can say is I'm glad I was there to see it. I do feel that Arsenal should be running away with this title race, and I feel that with the addition of two players in the summer, and assuming that they had stayed fit, then that they would be. But what the hell? Let's celebrate the entertainment.
Peter, you on board with that reading? Was Arsenal unlucky, or was this kind of match that maybe both teams deserve to win?
The latter, yeah. I mean, I was only sort of seeing highlights or looking in from Birmingham City's press room, but it looked just a fantastic game. I saw the second half. And Tottenham, when Tottenham get going, they are irresistible. I think they're the best team to watch in the Premiership, and that's even allowing for when Arsenal are on song. When they really get it together. I mean, those Inter Milan games have given them such a momentum, such a self-belief, haven't they? Mm. And they hit their best when they go behind. You know, how many times a season have they been trailing 2-0 and 3-0 and come good?
It's a useful trait, isn't it? That's what champions do.
I'm going to be a bit contrarian here, Ben, because I personally can think of more than one Premier League team I'd rather watch than Spurs, who admittedly do play good football. But
you mean Arsenal?
What? Yeah, not just Arsenal, but I mean, personally, I'd rather watch Chelsea. I'd sometimes watch Villa when on a good day, not this weekend. But it seemed to me that the way Spurs got back into the game. I mean, you're talking about. I didn't see too many other chances. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the ball over the top, which Bale wonderfully controlled into his stride. And while it wasn't a textbook finish because he should have side-footed it with his right, you're not going to complain if you've got a left foot that's so good and you can hit it with the outside of your left foot like that. Then you had the stupid penalty, which Cesc Fabregas gave away. And then you had another stupid free kick leading to Yunus Kabul's late goal. In between, you had Walcott and Koscielny fluffing chances. I mean, did Spurs just dominate the second half, or was it just Arsenal kind of chucking it away here?
I think if Spurs really looked at it and were honest with themselves, Arsenal let them back into the game. I think Arsenal must have known that Tottenham were going to come at them straight away after half time, and they conceded so early then they were always going to make things difficult for themselves. I think if Arsenal had that hard-nosed championship winning steel about them, they would have put the game beyond Spurs. I don't think it would have been a matter of whether Spurs could get back into it. I think Arsenal probably should have put it away. And as you say, even when at 2-2, when Spurs had got back into the game, Koscielny had a header, he should have scored with that.
But I don't think the steal, I accept that, Ben, about Arsenal, but I don't think the steal, I think we've got to be careful, I don't think the steal here is a question of lack of mental determination or anything like that. There's no more determined manager in the country than Wenger, and no more professional group of players. But if you haven't got good enough players to resist, and I think that basically my scapegoat for Saturday would certainly be Laurent Koscielny, who does not look ready for this league. Maybe he will be in the fullness of time. I think Squillaci, who's a moderately good centre-half, could get by with a good one alongside him. A player like Hangeland or Hughes from Fulham, you know, to pluck names out of the air. So I think that maybe Wenger, if Arsenal don't win the league, people might say, well, why didn't Wenger just spend a little money?
I agree. I think that there's that figure in the centre, in the heart of the defence, that John Terry, even Tony Adams figure that they haven't had for a while there, and they look certainly lacking in that on Saturday.
You've also got to add, with Arsenal, I take that point about the centre halves, but it's in the very nature, it's in their very DNA of what makes them so good, is that they will keep attacking, they will keep trying things. You look at the fullbacks, it wouldn't be in their nature to tuck in, help the centre-halves out. They've got to keep playing. It's the way that Arsenal do it. And if that means they're going to be forever fallible, then at least it'll be beautiful to watch.
Quite right.
Anyway, I don't know. I kind of actually think Arsenal are a lot more solid this year, and it's not, you know, Wenger's fault the Walcott and Koscielny couldn't put those chances away. I mean, and worryingly, the chance Koscielny put away, I don't know if you guys can picture it. There were basically three Arsenal players on the far post. Any one of those three guys could have headed him. It was a complete defensive breakdown. From Spurs on that play. But I mean, Spurs and defending, I just want to have a word on William Gallus, because obviously it was his first time back at the Emirates, and people seem to love to boo this guy wherever he goes. And I was looking before the game about, you know, the handshakes, reactions from teammates and so on. I kind of throw this out as a general question. Do we like to see this? Do we like to see players who don't laugh, who don't like each other, and sort of turn into a bit of a public spectacle? Or do we think that there's no place for that on the pitch?
Well, if they genuinely don't like each other, you know, what's the problem with that?
There's nothing wrong with not shaking hands.
I think that's childish. I really do. I think that, you know, you then ask the question, what about the case of Bridge and Terry? And you say, well, maybe in that case it was justified. But by and large, it's fairly childish. I think that, I mean, I think the shaking hands before a match is actually a good tradition. A lot of people say it's unrealistic and unfootball. I don't agree. I think a lot of unfootball things need to be done to make the game better. I do think that I must confess to being utterly bewildered as to why William Gallas, who gave Arsenal perfectly good service before doing only what Sol Campbell had done the other way around a few years earlier in terms of leaving the club, I think it was utterly hypocritical to boo him. And why do they waste energy? I wish Arsenal fans would use whatever decibels they can summon to encourage their team.
Well, and I'd add to that too. Sol Campbell, he was offered a contract by Spurs, and that's why he gets the Judas treatment.
Yes.
William Gallus was not offered a new deal by Arsenal, so they kind of showed him to the curb, and he signed for Spurs.
Absolutely.
They weren't unhappy to see the back of him at the time. I seem to remember he was accused of being slightly mentally weak at stages, and you know, all credit to him for coming back.
His commitment to Arsenal, having left Chelsea for them, could not have been questioned in any way, shape, or form. Even though the way in which he expressed it in the match at Birmingham and so on, you might nitpick on detail, but the fact that he gave the club good service and good value for money couldn't be argued.
No, I totally agree, and I think he deserved a lot of credit for the way he came through it on Saturday. He was given the armband. You know, he might polarise opinion, you might love him or you hate him, but you can't question his will to win, and I think we really saw that on Saturday.
Peter, Harry Redknapp, I don't know if you caught this, but, you know, after the game he was asked about his halftime team talk and his halftime substitutions, which, you know, I didn't think were exactly rocket science, you know, sending on Defoe for Lennon. He said, he actually refused the credit. He basically said, well, if I was so clever, I would have done that from the start of the game. I actually think he's kind of right. I mean, do we attach too much importance on this whole sort of halftime team talk, you know, crap, when, in fact, you're 2-0 down away from home? Of course you're going to put on your star striker, who's, even if he's returning from injury.
No, I don't think you do put too much onus on it. I think Harry Redknapp will have played a major part in that turnaround. And as for, you know, obvious substitutions or whatever, there's different phases of a game, aren't there, where as a game thins out, as people tire more, or as opponents who are leading, as they get a bit of complacency or whatever, you put on players at different stages of the game. So Defoe in the second half coming back from injury might be more explosive than putting him on from the start. I think Redknapp will have played a major part in that turnaround.
Now, one other point I want to make about Spurs, and the noise you hear is going to be the noise of me turning the pages in my issue of today's game, so don't freak out. That means you, Chris, the producer. I thought Harry did something which is quite kind of interesting. Effectively, he played Modric alongside Genius in what was, you know, sort of a 4-2-3-1 from the start.
Yes.
That is so not Luka Modric's position. You know, playing deep in front of the back four, not just about the tackling, the physical side, but just the movement and the reading. I thought he was all over the place. Alison Rudd, who did the game for us, and I presume the ratings as well, gave him a 5 on the day.
Yes.
Which I think about sums it up. Don't think it's entirely his fault, but it's just not his position. Going forward, what does Harry do now at this stage? Because unless you go to play 4-4-2, you can't play Modric alongside the holding.
It's arguable that Palacios for Modric, if he was going to play that formation, he should have played Palacios.
But then drop Modric.
And yes, well, I mean, you can't. I don't think. I mean, Modric can play in front of the back. He did play for Croatia in the European Championship of 2008.
But he had that position. He had Kovac alongside him, and he had Serna out wide. It's very different.
Exactly. It's a different form of football from the English Premier League, and I completely agree with you that he can't do that role in the English Premier League.
Spurs' chances of winning the title, or indeed finishing in the top four, what I'd like to do is quickly go around the room and in 10 seconds tell me, y'all can tell me where you think Spurs will finish and why. In 10 seconds, of course. So let's start with Ben, who's had the most time to prepare.
Lack of consistency. They can't win the championship this year. Outside chance of the top four. So I'll stick with last week's prediction of fourth.
Lansley.
I'm afraid I'm going to go, top four, but not to win the title. After Inter Milan, they go and lose to, you know, a lower half team. So not this year.
Yeah, I would say fourth or fifth. Do you want me to choose? Because obviously that's a fairly big
kind of makes a difference also to Mr. Mancini's future job prospects as well.
Yeah, fifth. And I don't think they'll win the title.
I can dig that. I think they might just finish a smidge lower because just out of by virtue of the injuries that they continue to have. But let's move on, and we're fortunate because we've got Peter Lansley with us, who was at St. Andrews for the Blues v Blues clash yesterday. Now, Peter, Birmingham started the season pretty badly, actually, and he can't even complain about injuries because I think McLeish had the second most settled lineup in the league. But then good result against Manchester City, and now this win against Chelsea. Deserved 3 points?
Well, I don't know whether it's deserved because Chelsea had a greater dominance of a Premier League game than anything for 4 years. I think Bill Edgar was writing this morning. But Ben Foster was brilliant, and Birmingham's back four is so steady and so so resilient. And Chelsea did lack the X factor. I know they had 25 goal attempts or whatever, but they didn't have what Lampard or someone brings to them with that extra incisiveness that takes a game and says, look, their goalkeeper's having an absolute worlder. I need to go and try something different. Chelsea lack that. Birmingham were fortunate on Saturday, but they are turning the corner. They played Villa the other week and they were the better team. Great result at Man City, and McLeish knows how to grind it, and he is doing it again.
Ben, you were nodding along. Was it? It was just a case of Foster's brilliance, and
he was fantastic. But I think Chelsea are missing those players who have dug them out of trouble in the past. I think Frank Lampard, Michael Essien, these kind of players who get up there and nick a goal for you when you need it. Mm-hmm. They've been missing those players at key moments over the last few weeks, and I think that's probably where the difference is.
But how does that work, though? Because they still played well. They still created a million chances of ball. And, okay, absolutely. So you didn't have Lampard and Essien, but, you know, you still had Drogba and Anelka and those rubbish players like that shooting on goals.
Sure. I think it's all part of a jigsaw, though, isn't it? I mean, 25 shots, you would think you'd come away with at least one goal. Ben Foster was excellent, but there is certainly something missing from Chelsea at the moment. I think there are problems off the field, we know about that, but you can't take away just how much these injuries have caused them.
We'll get to those off the field issues in a minute, though. Paddy, though, Ancelotti mm-hmm. came out and made the point that, look, you know, we played badly in our defeat against Sunderland. We were terrible. But today we played really well, and I didn't have a problem with our performance. Are you on board with that?
Yes, I am. I think as you know, if your goalkeeper and your two centre backs play outstandingly well, as Alex McLeish would know this from, because the goalkeeper and the two centre backs were the foundation of the great Aberdeen team under Ferguson, for which McLeish played.
And he had the good fortune of playing alongside Willie Miller, of course.
Exactly, with Jim Leighton behind, and Willie Miller, right?
Did you know that when Willie Miller does a press up, he's actually pressing down the world?
Yeah. The they used to say of Willie Miller that he played as if Aberdeen didn't have a goalkeeper, which I thought was a great turn of phrase.
We're going to do the Willie Miller appreciation podcast.
No, Willie Miller was a great player. I mean, were you being kind of sarcastic there or something?
About Willie Miller?
Yeah.
That was a real 70s and 80s tash he had, though, wasn't it?
I knew it. Leave it to the guy with the Midlands to go and mock the man's mustache.
Yes.
No, you have to appreciate it. I'm making a little detour. I have a lot of friends from Aberdeen, and I grew up with the idea that Willie Miller was the greatest centre half that British football has ever produced.
I don't think that's the most ludicrous idea I've ever had.
Well, and even also, in Aberdeen? What about this idea? That if that had been, and you've heard this before, if that had been McLeish in there, for that gentleman, Alan Hansen, then Scotland would have won the World Cup.
Yep.
You know, Shingeli, all the time. You're on board with that,
yes,
right?
Yes, I absolutely.
Hansen cost Scotland the World Cup.
Without any question. Every time I read, a mix-up then occurred between Hansen and Willie Miller. I think that has got to be libelous against Willie Miller.
What was Hansen trying to do?
When somebody the size of Hansen runs into you as you're trying to kick the ball perfectly legitimately, under no challenge, by the way, from an opponent, you're entitled to say something equally unbroadcastable.
Do you think Hansen was perhaps a communist agent and he's kept it hidden from us all these years and was trying to do it for...
I would say the fact that Hansen got only 18 caps for Scotland was not exactly one of the greatest injustices in the history of football.
Right, enough Alan Hansen and Willie Miller, but, you know, I need to have my annual ode to Willie Miller. Going back to this, Ben, you touched upon it. Issues off the pitch. Reports that Ancelotti not quite happy with some of the things that have happened of late. Ray Wilkins' departure and the way it was all blamed on him when, in fact, he had nothing to do with it. Some questions about Michael Imanalo, promoted to the assistant manager's position. And, of course, Ancelotti's got, you know, a year and a half left on his contract. What do you know? What does Matt Hughes know?
I think there's no doubt that Ancelotti's unhappy. He's unhappy with the way he's been made to look over the past week. He's unhappy with the way Chelsea have dealt with the Wilkins situation. I think it's clumsy. And Imanalo has been brought in without any consultation on Ancelotti's part. So he's there with a man who he doesn't know and he doesn't trust.
Well, surely he must know him. He's met the club for...
Sure, but
he's his opposition.
I don't think you can say he trusts him, though, does he, Gab? He doesn't know him to trust him. You couldn't say he's a right-hand man.
Yes, it's traditional for assistants, the appointment of assistants to be made in consultation with the manager.
What an insane idea.
I think what's happened is that the Wilkins is definitely a factor, but I think the injuries and the runner results they've had have all caused this become a crisis in the media's eyes. I think there's a meeting today between Ancelotti and members of the board. He will also talk to Richard Bevan at the LMA and discuss his options, but the general feeling is that he is unlikely to walk away.
And I mean, it's also unlikely that the Latin equivalent of "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" is ever going to be Chelsea's motto under Roman Abramovich. It seems that as soon as things are going well, the owner sends down a diktat that he acts Alan Hansen to Carlo Ancelotti's Willie Miller.
That's wonderful. Another Willie Miller reference. Peter, I want to throw this out there. Did you think maybe, because Ancelotti arrived as a reputation, you know, you have some managers who are divas, who are control freaks, who want to control every aspect of the club. He arrived, you know, with a reputation as a guy who was very successful at AC Milan in an environment where there were other people making all sorts of decisions, and he just got on with it on the training pitch, you know, with the first team squad and made a difference. And do you think he's maybe paid the price a little bit for being seen as Mr.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Nice guy, Mr. Pushover. And can you answer the question without referencing Willie Miller?
Yep, I definitely can do the latter point. Mr. Nice Guy, I don't know. It's certainly what he worked with AC Milan, isn't it? So that's where he's come from. Perhaps that's part of what appealed to Abramovich about him. But it was very pointed when we were speaking to him in the tunnel at St. Andrews. He brought up that point when we were saying to him, hang on, surely you've got to have some say in who your number two is. Fergie wouldn't let this go on. Mourinho wouldn't let this go on. He was the one who pointed this up and said, look, you can't compare me with Ferguson. He's in control of his club.
Yeah.
I'm just giving technical direction. As he walked away at that, we were absolutely, there's a man who is not happy with this situation. Mm. And how can you, if a manager is there, okay, you give technical direction. But part of technical direction is how you liaise with your dressing room, isn't it? Therefore, you have a man who the players are comfortable with. You have someone who can, you know, go and play good cop if you've just given them the mother of all rollickings. So once you start undermining that hierarchy, you've got problems. And Chelsea had 25 chances, they're missing players, but this is integral to their problems at the moment.
I mean, regular listeners will know that I don't like the all-powerful manager model. You know, may work for Ferguson, but he's a bit of a one-off. And Ferguson, who once managed Willie Miller, by the way, of course, and was so successful in Aberdeen, and I have to stop. But that said, I my reading of this is a little bit like at AC Milan, Ancelotti accepted, you know, for lack of a better word, the interference, and they named his, you know, they named the assistants to his staff, and a lot of them were his former teammates and so on.
Yes.
But he came on as a manager in a club where there was a long-standing culture of success. The people doing the interfering, people like Galliani and Braida, had been there. They'd won the European Cups.
Even Berlusconi knows his football.
They created the blueprint. I don't know that when he looks around the club, especially now, even now with Kenyon gone and whatever, you know, he's got Ron Gourlay, who's a commercial guy.
Yeah.
Tenenbaum, not much of a football background.
One end of a football from them.
I mean,
Abramovich, who's an Arivist.
I kind of feel that apart from Frank Arneson, with whom he might not always see eye to eye, but who has a lot of respect football wise and who's got a serious pedigree.
Yes.
I don't necessarily know that, you know, he's that willing to take direction from above. You know, you need to work with this guy, you need to work with that guy. I want to just take advantage of having Peter here to talk a little bit about Birmingham as well. And what's different this year to last year? Now, when I look at this, obviously Chucho's gone. I kind of see a team that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, part of Birmingham's problem for me this year is that there's a bit of they still defend very well and they're very organized, but it's not a team that's necessarily built to counterattack because there's not a lot of flat-out speed in the lineup. And, you know, maybe down to when I look at his wide fares, you know, Larsson's basically a recycled holding midfielder, you know, Faye's a runner. You don't perhaps have the creativity that maybe you had last year. Maybe that's why he brought in Hleb, but he hasn't really produced yet.
That's right.
Bo Sejour hasn't settled. Is that pretty much the problem?
I think the idea was how do you upgrade on getting your best finish in 51 years? When Birmingham finished ninth, then immediately even Birmingham fans are going, okay, well, we want at least the same again and maybe throw in a cup or something, or a cup final, which obviously is a bit harsh. But so he tried to upgrade. The resources were there reasonably, you know, bringing Hleb on how do you say his name, Hleb, on big wages, spent $6 million on Zigic and on Foster. So you're trying to upgrade what you've already got. But then at the same time, you've got to integrate these guys into a dressing room. Birmingham was a very sort of British-based dressing room. And then they're going to be on big money, so you've got that. Zigic hasn't, for me, really settled yet. Kleb definitely hasn't yet. And yet you want these guys to be, you know, getting into the team, getting field time, getting a feel of things. So the creativity point, they would hope in that someone of Kleb's quality would bring that. He's not fully match fit. He's not on the same wavelength. Another big miss for Birmingham is James McFadden, who he's not exactly a fan's favourite yet, even if he is Alex McLeish's. But he did bring the little X factor for Birmingham, but he could still fit into this sort of, you know, British work hard system. So I think that's the difficulty with integrating these new players while still reproducing all that solidity.
Moving on, our debate this week is about managers, and I have some interesting stats here from Chris, the producer. Last year, actually, we're in the same situation as last year in the sense that no manager had been sacked by this stage last year, although Paul Hart was sacked this time last season from his job at Portsmouth. And if you look at, you know, the years before that, by this stage in 2009, there had been four managerial changes. Courbesy at West Ham, Keegan at United, at Newcastle United, of course, Juan de Ramos at Spurs, and of course, Harry at Pompey. And the year before that, even more so, Jose Mourinho leaving Chelsea. Sammy Lee, God, remember that Sammy Lee's time in charge of Bolton, leaving Bolton, of course. Martin Yole leaving Spurs, Chris Hutchings leaving Wigan, and of course Steve Bruce leaving Birmingham City, and right around this time also Billy Davis leaving Derby County. So a lot more managerial changes a couple years ago. Now obviously we had Martin O'Neill leaving Villa just before the season started. Is this any kind of a trend we're seeing these last 2 years? Clubs perhaps a little less trigger happy, or is this just a statistical quirk, Paddy?
I think it's partly statistical quirk. I think it's partly that I have a sense that clubs are less frightened of relegation than they were 10 years ago. that the parachute payment is working, and that the notion of going down, coming back, going down, coming back is no longer something that appears a bad model. Because so many clubs have done it successfully, Leicester City, West Bromwich Albion and so on. But, I mean, really, this is all straining for effect. The main reason is that the that there's been too much scrutiny. Partly through the activities of bookmakers, the press have become much more obsessed with sacking. I mean, the Hodgson situation is particularly ludicrous. He's only just started the job. A few years ago, Bobby Robson was sacked 5 games into a season, and everybody said how silly it was that Newcastle had done such a silly thing. Yes, but you know, that's an argument for sacking the chap at the end of the season, not for waiting till the new season begins and the transfer window is closed.
Just because you mentioned Newcastle there, Willie Miller once. No, just kidding. Newcastle sort of, I think they did like 3 managers in a row. They sacked somebody in September, if I'm not mistaken. I think Hullett also left in September, and possibly Dog Leash as well.
Yeah, the Hodgson thing. He was under pressure after preseason friendlies, but people were saying he'd lost the plot or whatever the cliche they use. Fortunately, the board's not so stupid as to think that way. Even though it's a new board from the one that that appointed Hodgson. Mancini similarly is there because the ownership judge he's the right person to be. They're in the top 4, so why should he be under pressure? Grant is a different case. And personally, I'm a little bit surprised that West Ham have persisted with something that doesn't look as if it's going to have a happy answer. But again, it may be part of West Ham's strategy to go down. If you look at it, it wouldn't be a tragedy.
Well, Karen Brady, you know, businesswoman of the year, right? She's on television, so she must be right.
It wouldn't be, it's not something that you should necessarily waste all the money that's inevitable in sacking a manager, sacking all his assistants, bringing in somebody new who ain't going to fancy West Ham one little bit. It might be wiser to see how they get on. Let's not forget that Portsmouth under Grant last season, but for the docking of points, would have been pretty close to escaping relegation.
To be fair, Paddy, I know that Grant's entire coaching staff, I think they all probably make less money than you do.
That's a pretty tight-fisted club there. And the quality of my journalism.
I think another factor that might be, two factors. One might be the financial situation at the moment. I think sacking a manager is an expensive business in lots of cases.
It is.
And I think clubs are reluctant to spend that money if they don't have to.
Yes.
Another factor, I think, is that the league table, the Premier League table this year is very tight, it's very bunched, no one's cut adrift. And clubs are a win away from a big jump at the moment.
Yes.
And I think that's maybe part of the reason why clubs aren't, you know, jumping to conclusions so quickly.
Yes,
and thinking our season is going the wrong way.
The case for patience because of last season there was a gap between at this time after 14 matches there was a gap between the leading club and the club just above the bottom three of 21 points. This season it's 14 points, and that tells you that it's a much healthier league.
Yeah,
whatever an Arsenal fan may think about, we should have beaten Spurs, or a Chelsea fan might think about, we should have beaten Birmingham. It's actually a better league.
Well, Fulham and Everton, 16th and 17th, have lost as many games as Chelsea and Arsenal.
I mean,
Fulham,
as you say, 17.
17, yeah.
Two wins off contention for Europa League. Well, that's great.
Also, Gab, I think another point is we've perhaps got over, or boardrooms have got over, the hysteria that followed the transfer window. A knock on with that, with more managers getting sacked, was that what did we have to hyperbolise about it?
Yes.
That's the word. We didn't have an impending transfer in the middle of November, so let's all jump on Mancini because then won for 2 games.
Yes.
So I think that was what was happening when we got to a peak of managerial changes. Now perhaps people think, okay, Sven wasn't actually doing that bad a job. Mark Hughes wasn't actually doing that bad a job. So you can't just go and sack the manager all the time, obviously, if you apply common sense. And perhaps that common sense is now kicking in.
I'm somebody who, I'm in the minority. When a manager gets sacked, most of the time, I view it as a positive because
somebody else is going to be given a chance. And I think the metric by which we judge managers sometimes is a little bit too tightly linked to results. Obviously, results are very important, but what I look for is something being built there? Does the manager have a plan? Is there a structure? And so with that in mind, for example, even though they're in the relegation zone, I wouldn't sack Mick McCarthy. I don't like those 18th play. I don't think he's a great manager. But I think I think his team has an identity. I think that they play a certain way. And, you know, I think they're about as good as they can be under McCarthy.
Absolutely right. Can I come in there, Gab? Because, I've followed Wolves' fortunes quite closely. And this is the best set of players Wolves have had and the most unified they've had in 30 years. And they might be second bottom, but the direction in which Mick McCarthy and the club are going is a good direction. Is their squad better than 2 years ago? Yes. Is it stronger than it was 2 years ago? Yes. Are the fans still with the players and the team and McCarthy? Yes, they are. So they are moving in a good direction. But as you said, in any one game, you know, you can go and lose 3-2 to Man United in the last minute and the next week 2-1. And then if you don't quite get something right. So, Wolves are playing in a good way, and if they keep confidence levels up, McCarthy has a unity in that dressing room and a very definite way of playing that suggests he's doing the best job they can. If Wolves go down, so be it. He's still probably the best man for the job.
Yeah. I mean, you listen to Lansley and you think, this guy's not going to last 10 minutes in journalism because he talks such utter sense.
when I look at the bottom 10 clubs, I said, I like it when managers go. I think managers have really cushy situations. As you know, one of my biggest pet peeves is the way, you know, a manager comes in and is like, well, I need 3 years. I need to bring in my own players. The owner's got to back me. Give me money to spend, and so on. Why don't you just work with the guys who are there? Why don't you show you're better than the guy you replaced by doing a better job? Why don't you show me something first? And then what I hate is then these guys get sacked and they get their whole thing paid. They get their entire wages paid off. But I look at this and I say, like, which managers, you know, stink in the bottom 10? And apart from Avram Grant, but there I don't think it's necessarily sacking the manager. I think you should sack the owners if you could. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Houllier fan, but so far, so good. You're not going to have a go at Ollie. No. Big Sam plays turgid football, and I think we saw it again. But
he knows how to manage.
He's at mid-table. Goodness me, they're newly promoted in the top 10. I think you have to accept the fact that even though he's your mate, in ninth place, if you ask who's over and underachieved this season...
Yep. It's a very good point.
Right down there.
I remember many, many years ago, a guy, Tony Parks, who was a sort of part of the Ewood Park furniture, and he often sort of stood in as manager and had a spell as manager of the club. He's probably still there. But anyway, Tony Parks said, if there were 20 Alex Fergusons in the Premier League, three of them would get relegated every season. So, I mean, I agree with Gab. I mean, we've got... A pretty good.
Totally
we've
agree,
got
yeah.
20 pretty good managers.
Well,
I don't
know about 20, but I think we have 17 or 18.
The best part of them, you could argue, we'd all have our tastes and lots of Liverpool.
It's a good point. If you ask yourself, who's doing a bad job of these people? It's really difficult. Because I was looking, I go at Roy here, but objectively, I don't think he's happy with the job he's doing first and foremost. But I'm thinking, doesn't think he's happy with the job he's doing. And, and I'm sure Avram Grant's not happy with the job he's doing. But crikey, look at these other people. I mean, Tony Pulis, Stoker, 8th.
Yep.
Steve Bruce, Sunderland, are 7th.
Yep.
Go through it. Owen Coyle, are you kidding me? You know, so maybe it's no wonder that Mancini and Hodgson get so much stick, because they're the only ones who could, you know, you could argue, ought to be doing better.
Yep.
All right, final thing, because we need to end with a little question, because our producer, Chris, the producer, went through the trouble of writing it. One-word answer, please. Who will win the sack race? Ben.
Avram Grant.
Lansley.
That was two words. Avram Grant, yeah.
So was that.
Grant.
Well done. One word. Okay, time now for some quick hits.
Wayne Rooney makes his return for Manchester United. Paddy, was the reaction you get what, pretty much what you expected?
Yeah.
And would you like me to give you a chance to plug your own book?
No, it's okay.
And given that you recently wrote a book about the great man, in Sir Alex's mind, is everything forgotten?
Oh, the football bloody hell, you mean? Yes. that was the book about Sir Alex. And I think it is all forgotten. It's the beginning of the forgetting process. And when Rooney starts scoring goals, it will be forgotten.
It's the forgetting of the beginning. Gerard Houllier turns to youth at Blackburn, but Villa go down 2-0. Mark Albrighton, Kieran Clark, Barry Bannon, Jonathan Hogg, Nathan Delfonso, Chris Hurd. Might Martin O'Neill have been better off if he turned to some of these guys earlier on rather than spending money on somebody named Fabian Delph? Or is Houllier's green revolution a bridge too far and a bit of an illusion? Peter?
I'm not sure it's an illusion. I think they're where they are in the table, which is 13th and only 3 points above the relegation zone. There's some great talent there, but throw too many young kids in all at once and they might sink rather than swim.
Got that, Jared. We need more Steely and Petrov. Wigan go to Old Trafford, arguably outplay United in the first half, and then get two guys sent off. Ben, how much sympathy do you have for Roberto Martinez? And was some of that officiating a bit harsh in the sense that had the shoe been on the other foot?
I think you do have to sympathise for Martinez. Before United took the lead, Wigan were the better side. Van der Sar was the one making the saves. One decision, I don't think you can argue with the red card, but possibly the second yellow was a bit harsh.
Got that. Props to my man Roberto Wigan.
Gab, I've got a question for you now, so if you can hand me that duck. Thank you very much. Here, boy. All right. Gab, we heard that last week Inter had a long clear-the-air type talk with Rafa Benitez. What happened next, and how did he get on at the weekend?
Well, basically, they wanted to make sure that Rafa still had all his marbles, and it was reported that he had two games in which to impress, away to lowly Chievo, and then in midweek against Twente in the Champions League, and it's not looking good so far. They contrived to lose 2-1 at Chievo. Samuel Eto'o headbutting an opponent, getting himself sent off towards the end, Zidane-style. Champions League, make or break for Rafa.
Did you get it in?
Of course I got it in. I'm a professional. Thank you to all my guests today, broadcasting live from the Peak District, Mr. Peter Lansley, Ben Smith, of course, and, of course, Paddy Barkley. Now, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis. You also get our web chats. I'll do mine on Mondays. You get Ollie K's on Wednesdays. You can follow us on Twitter.
And I would like to also say that I'm the 154th most popular Times journalist on Twitter.
154th.
Now, that's a rise.
Do you agree, though, that if Willie Miller were a Times journalist, he'd be number one? He'd be number one through 100.
He's number one human being that ever existed.
Thanks for listening this week. Sorry about the rambly ending. Willie Miller, if you're out there, we love you.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.